The National Broadcasting Company presents The National Hour. This is a mirror of public opinion, reflecting what America and the world are thinking, planning, saying, doing. This is today's interpretation of the problems and the newsworthy milestones we must reach and pass on the road to peace and reconstruction. Today, one day before the end of the old year, we present the seventh in the distinguished new NBC series, The National Hour.
Our subject for today?
Forecast in the fields of business, labor, prices, sports, aviation.
What to expect from fashions, movies, health, television, comedy.
The shape of things to come during the next 365 days.
Predictions for 1946.
Robert St. John reporting from New York and ready to turn the pages for you on a preview of what you can expect from this coming year. You'll hear it from a brilliant list of experts, each a leader in his field, up to and including that young man from Hollywood, Bob Hope. And of course, we have our own Washington wise man, Robert McCormick, down in the nation's capital.
Robert McCormick reporting, and right now gazing into a crystal ball as big as the Capitol dome. Ready and standing by.
A famous American once said, "If I could see a copy of the New York Times printed one year ahead of time, I could become the richest man in the world." Well, we won't promise to make you rich in the next 30 minutes, and we won't deliver a copy of your newspaper one year ahead of time. But beginning right now, we will make a sincere effort to forecast some of the most important trends of the coming year. We shall look slightly ahead in time. For instance, let's say that right now, it's 1 minute past midnight of tomorrow night. Am I out celebrating? Indeed, I am not. I'm nervously pacing up and down a hospital corridor.
Call for Dr. Time. Call for Dr. Peter Time. Dr. Time, report to maternity.
Oh, doctor, is there any news?
Well, all your worries are over, Mr. St. John.
I mean
it's a boy. Just about the bounciest, brashest, ruggedest youngster I've ever brought into the world. Well, I've got to run along now, but the nurse is bringing him out. What a boy!
Here he is, Mr. St. John. Really, we've never seen anything like him. Thank goodness.
Hiya, Pop. This nurse they gave me. Isn't she a dish?
Look, I am not your Pop,
Johnny,
and...
stop it.
Come on, Dimples. What are you doing tonight?
I'm your uncle, Robert St. John.
And this is your uncle, Robert McCormick, down in Washington.
Robert St. John. Robert McCormick. Sort of short on front names around here, aren't they?
A coincidence, merely a coincidence. But remember, you've got almost 140 million other uncles and aunts.
Ah, is that right? Well, with that many, why did I have to draw you two guys?
The doctor was right. You are a very brash and bouncy youngster. But that's because you're young and inexperienced. You see, they picked out your Uncle Bob McCormick and me to tell you what can be expected to happen to you in your lifetime.
Well, let's get going. I haven't got all year, you know.
That's exactly what you have got, 1 year. You see, you're Johnny New Year, 1946.
That's right, Johnny. And as a brand new baby, you want to know whether you're going to be in good health during your life. Now, what about the USA in 1946? Right here at our Washington microphone is Dr. R. E. Dyer, Director of the National Institute of Health of the United States Public Health Service. Dr. Dyer.
Scientists in research laboratories throughout the world, as well as we in the National Institute of Health, research branch of the United States Public Health Service, are fortified by the knowledge that preventive methods helped establish one of the best medical records ever made by any military organization in any war. During the 4 years of war, our troops and those of our allies were protected from the communicable diseases such as typhoid, typhus, and tetanus, to mention only three. This protection was the end result of years of research in many countries. It was brought out in the President's message to Congress on November the 19th that Selective Service rejected, on account of physical defects, one-third of the men examined during the war. Many of these physical defects possibly could have been prevented had we known as much about the underlying causes as we have learned through research on some of the other preventable diseases. I am thinking of defects brought about particularly by nutritional deficiencies, of mental disturbances, heart disease, tuberculosis, and dental caries. Without reference to persons of military age, heart disease, cancer, and mental disturbances are three of the most important of medical research problems today. Our knowledge of the prevention of these diseases is almost nil. It is not too much to hope, however, that these problems may be solved through research. That is the goal towards which scientists in research laboratories throughout the world are working as the new year displaces the old.
And that, Johnny New Year, is the 1946 picture for the nation's health.
I think I'm getting a slight touch of the pip. Hey, Uncle Robert.
Yes, Johnny.
There's a swell candy store across the street. Could I put the bite on you for, say, a buck?
Well, Johnny New Year, that is a subject we're all interested in. Our income now and for the coming year. Will 1946 be marked by boom or by bust? We're fortunate to have with us the new president of the National Association of Manufacturers. He's not a big businessman, nor yet a little businessman. As head of the Manning Maxwell Moore Company, he employs about 3,000 people who make machinery for all types of manufacturing business, both big and little. For a 1946 business forecast, here is Mr. Robert R. Wasson.
In 1946, the American people can set a new all-time record for production of civilian goods. They can create a larger number of jobs in productive enterprise. They can provide a higher standard of living for all of us. To attain these goals, the public must demand that every policy, every law, and every government rule and regulation be designed to encourage production. Government, management, labor, and agriculture must recognize that they are running a race against inflation. This race can be won only by drastic reduction of federal expenditures and by ending all restrictions that now prevent the unparalleled production that is possible in America. American industry is determined to do its part in bringing forth this flow of goods to the market. With equal determination and with cooperation on the part of labor, agriculture, and the government, 1946 will become the year in which America won the peace for its people and for the world.
Of course, Johnny New Year, you know business prosperity will depend a great deal during next year upon what happens in the troubled field of labor.
Well, stop dawdling, Uncle Bob McCormick. Slip us the picture.
Okay, coming up. Also, here at our Washington microphone and looking ahead into 1946 is Mr. Paul M. Herzog, chairman of the National Labor Relations Board. Here is Mr. Herzog.
No one can foretell the course of labor events during 1946, but some of us, representatives of industry, of labor, and of government, will have the power and therefore the responsibility of helping to determine the direction which these events will take. Things do not just happen in America. They can be made to happen in a certain way by men who are free to shape their own destiny. It follows that the labor history of 1946 depends upon what we do with the opportunities that come our way and with the difficulties that beset our path. These difficulties must be seized upon as challenges rather than regarded merely as omens of disaster. The present wave of strikes, however exaggerated the headlines may sometimes make it appear, is a most serious matter. which presents just such a challenge to government, industry, and labor. I venture to prophesy that all three will rise to the challenge, and that early in 1946, new attitudes and perhaps new machinery will prevail, so that we can forge ahead with the task of reconversion without protracted interruption. By encouraging collective bargaining, the National Labor Relations Board stands ready to do its part. The board will seek to do justice between management and labor. We shall both advocate and practice self-restraint so that events may bear out the prophecy that 1946 can and will be a year of industrial peace.
McCormick.
Yes, Johnny New Year.
While the labor picture was on, I slipped across the street to the candy store. Do you know what they charge you now for jawbreakers? Why, I ought to take my atomic automatic and go over there and... Ah!
Oh, now, Johnny. You know, prices are a matter for all of us to worry about, and no doubt one of our biggest 1946 question marks is on all our future price tags. Judge Kasky Kulkala, administrator of the Economic Stabilization, had intended to join our party today, but he's starting the new year wrong by being sick. So his assistant, Mr. Paul Duncan, will tell us what Judge Collett thinks of the year coming up. So, Mr. Duncan.
In recent months, our American economy has undergone sharp and rapid changes. Many of the restrictions made necessary by war have been lifted. The lifting of these restraints was welcomed by all of us. We drew a deep breath and we said, now for some normal living, without rationing, without shortages, without so many controls. But as 1945 comes to a close, we find grave hazards still lie ahead before we can relax and really enjoy peacetime living. I've not forgotten what happened after the other war. We went on a buying spree. We bought $15 silk shirts. Then we lost those shirts and all the others we had. Now, I don't profess to know everything about inflation, but I do know from experience what it can do to our daily lives. Inflation must be prevented. I think that needs to be said in plain language. It needs to be said because there have been disturbing signs lately and disturbing talk about prices being turned loose, about what will happen after next June 30th. That kind of talk does not represent the feeling of America. It is now more important than ever to stand firmly against inflated prices. The fact is, upward pressures are greater than we anticipated. Consumer purchasing and the demand for goods have stayed at high levels. These are good signs. But if that demand, fortified by pent-up purchasing power, is turned loose, it will drive the price of many necessities beyond the reach of millions of American people. If we are reckless, if we spend irresponsibly, we may lose here at the end of the road from war to peace much that we have preserved up to now.
Thank you, Mr. Duncan.
For a youngster, Johnny New Year, you certainly seem to know who's on first base.
Nah, who is not on first base? Who's on second? What's on first
now,
base?
Now, let's not start that or you'll get me mixed up. But for a man who isn't mixed up in sports, well, who's a better authority than NBC's own Bill Stern? Bill's on the West Coast now to bring us all the exclusive NBC description of the Rose Bowl Classic on New Year's Day. But he can take time off to tell us what's ahead in 1946 in sports. And so come in, Bill Stern from Hollywood.
Good afternoon. These past war years have been expensive for sports. We've lost such men as Tommy Hitchcock, Charlie Paddock, Niall Kinnick, Joe Hunt, all champions and all dead. They and scores of others who weren't champions but were sportsmen are lying under the powdered snows of a wintry grave. They gave their lives, and in so doing, they made the coming years hold great promise. For because of their sacrifice, the war has ended. And, as always follows a war, thanks to millions of men who've been made physically fit by battle, there'll come a great rejuvenation of sports. After the last war, this country experienced athletics' golden age. The days of Bill Tilden, Bobby Jones, Babe Ruth, and Jack Dempsey. These coming days of this new year will see other youngsters rise from obscurity to march from oblivion to fame. We're facing the greatest boom that sports has ever known. And when it comes, as come it must, let's remember that far away in forgotten graves lie those who made it possible. This is Bill Stern in Hollywood, California. Now back to New York.
¶¶
John. Here comes a guy looks like he hasn't been in bed in a week.
Johnny, please, please, he's famous.
I heard the little bum, and I got this way from staying up last night watching other people observe his arrival.
Somebody must have slipped you some bad ice water.
Yeah.
But please,
yeah.
Please, please, listen, Johnny New Year. This is Mr. Earl Wilson of the New York Post, a famous entertainment reporter and syndicated columnist. Mr. Wilson, will you tell our friends what to expect from the movies in 1946?
Sure. I got some Hollywood forecasts for you. But naturally, I had to go to Hollywood to get them. I telephoned my little pal, Sidney Skalski, the Hollywood columnist. And we've collaborated on these predictions. And when I say we collaborated on these predictions, I mean he made these predictions and I wrote them down. And here they are. For the first time, the Academy Awards and the New York Film Critics Awards are likely to be the same. The Lost Weekend will be chosen the best picture. In fact, the film critics will probably make that selection very soon. Ray Milland will be chosen the best actor. Ingrid Bergman will be chosen the best actress. Billy Wilder will be chosen the best director for directing The Lost Weekend. Miss Bergman should get the Best Actress Award on the basis of three pictures, Spellbound, Saratoga Trunk, and Bells of St. Mary's. And now here are some other predictions. Betty Hutton, who ranked 12th in this year's list of box office attractions after one starring picture, will become one of the top box office attractions next year. June Allison will develop into an MGM 1946 sensation. A couple of studios are developing boys who are destined to be another Van Johnson. And this brings up the question, do we need another Van Johnson? Well, anyway, these boys are Peter Lawford and Bill Williams. The only Broadway predictions that I want to make are that Tommy Manville will get married again next year, and here's a weather forecast. It's going to be awful drunk out New Year's Eve.
Now that sound you hear, Johnny New Year, that is a plane.
Well, I didn't think it was the buzzing noise in Earl Wilson's head.
Well, of course you didn't. The point is that in 1946, we're likely to see almost fantastic strides in the field of aviation. Doubtless the many inventions of wartime will be adapted to peacetime use. But the man to look ahead and tell us about that is Mr. Lauren Deke Lyman, former Pulitzer Prize winner in journalism. Today, he is assistant to the chairman of the United Aircraft Corporation, Mr. Lyman.
In modern history, every great war has been followed by a revolutionary growth in a new means of transportation. After the war between the states, railroads grew into a great new utility, serving millions rather than thousands. Under the impetus of World War I, the motor car took a primary place in our economy and life. World War II has brought the flowering of the air age. 5 years ago, transoceanic air travel was a novelty. Today, the Air Transport Command alone carries 50,000 persons a month across the oceans. The newest aircraft, the first of which are already flying, carry 100 passengers at 250 to 400 miles an hour, instead of, as today, 20 passengers at less than 200. The private plane as a utility will really make itself felt. Already 5,000 farmers and ranchers are flying their own aircraft. The horizons of aviation are unlimited. Through personal travel, cargo and air mail, the aircraft of 1946 will move a long way toward becoming the servant of all the American people.
And now, Johnny New Year, what do you think comes next?
Maybe that nurse, huh? Ah, what a dish.
No, Johnny, this time it's television.
Ah, this I gotta see.
Well, Johnny, all of us are waiting to see television to see what strides have been made during the war years and what may be expected this year. The man to tell us just that is an international authority in the field of electronics. He is vice president in charge of research of the Radio Corporation of America. Here is Mr. E.W. Engstrom.
The miracle of radar and the advent of post-war television make 1945 a year to be remembered as beginning a third cycle in the evolution of radio. First, there was wireless telegraphy. Second, broadcasting of the human voice and music. And now the world enters the third cycle, the era of radio sight. Already civilian radio production is underway. Home and automobile receivers are again coming into the market. Television is practical for the home and is ready to take its place as one of the necessities of life. Networks of television stations are in prospect as automatic radio relay stations and coaxial cable circuits spread from city to city. In addition, television will be widely utilized throughout commerce and industry. Department stores will use it so that the public may shop by television. Industry will use radio sight as eyes in factories, observing and directing operations, looking into areas dangerous or inaccessible to the human eye. Radar will reveal to traffic controllers at airports, though night or fog obscures all seeing, the relative locations of runways, nearby planes, and threatening storms. Radar and television combined in a complete system for scientific air navigation will control traffic, prevent collisions, and provide for instrument landing. The era of radio sight is here and promises to be a most important new service as we move into 1946.
Thank you, Mr. Engstrom. And now, Johnny New Year, the time has definitely come when we should talk about, well, about women.
Well, did I say no?
What will our ladies look like during 1946? To tell us that, we have with us the internationally famous Fifth Avenue fashion consultant, Toby.
Toby or not Toby, I'll listen.
For a forecast of 1946 fashions, here is Toby.
Well, I predict that we'll all be dancing again this year, just as we did after the First World War. Tea dancing, prom dancing, nightclub dancing. Everyone will be dancing, young and old. And so we'll all be wearing dancing dresses, short and long, with full swirling skirts, snug little bodices, curving hips and rounded shoulders, and low, kissable necklines. Dresses to get a dance partner and to hold him. I predict that the light look will be the right look for 1946, that women will dress in light neutral colors like eggshell and beige and platinum gray from head to foot. Yes, we really mean foot. For the first time in over 15 years, light shoes are smart again in pretty soft shades of beige or cocoa or gray. And I predict that the first thing you'll see about a woman this spring will be her sleeves. Yes, the war's over at last for the fashion industry, so now sleeves will be as big as our smart American designers want to make them. We'll have all sorts of big, beautiful sleeves. Balloon sleeves, push-up sleeves, bishop sleeves, leg of mutton sleeves, all high, wide, and handsome. I predict by their sleeves you shall know them, the smart fashions of 1946.
So, Johnny New Year, during 1946, that is what little girls will be made of.
Yum, yum.
Of course, no forecast for 46 would be complete without a look at the field of comedy. Now, have you any comedian in mind, Johnny?
Are you kidding? Thanks for the memory, for Tuesday evening show, for teeth with neon glow, for eyes that bag and gags that sagged, and vegetables we throw.
Johnny, stop it. Before we get into trouble here, let's look at comedy in 1946 with Bob Hope in Hollywood.
How do you do, ladies and gentlemen? This is Bob National Hour Hope looking into the crystal ball for 1946 and telling you that when you make your New Year's resolutions, promise to take care of your China, and your smile will be allied like England, us, and the Russians. You know, NBC asked me to go on the National Hour today and tell you if there's a future in being a comedian. That's sort of a sneaky way of asking you if you think you're going to keep on working next year. Of course, personally, I'm not worried. My sponsor told me I'd go places in 1946. He even suggested one place. You ought to see the studio they put me in out here. Sid Strokes and Joe Alvin must be running the bigger ones to the Rose Bowl crowds. Studio we're in is so small, I'm sitting in the engineer's lap, and we both had to exhale to get in here. There wasn't any room for the microphone, so they've got me talking through a knothole in the door. So much delicate equipment on the floor, you got to break the shell open before you drop the egg. But really, everybody's sort of looking forward to ringing out the old year and bringing in the new. Most of the actors are getting ready for a big celebration tomorrow night. I just saw W.C. Fields walking down Vine Street with two supporting players. But seriously, folks, 1946 is going to bring quite a few problems to comedians. The war is over, and like the rest of the country, we're facing reconversion. Reconversion, that's a G.I. trading a dream of Lana Turner in a three-day pass for a seven-day layoff in a dream of Lana Turner. But our reconversion problem is really serious. It means retooling our gags from Army to civilian audiences. You know what a civilian is today. That's a fellow with an old suit with a new button. This reconversion has really got us worried. The day is over when all you had to do to get a laugh was to open your mouth and have the teeth fall out or tell Colonna to stop clowning and get off the stage. I guess I've had the greatest experience with my experience with the military audiences, and they were wonderful audiences. But Shangri-La is over for most of the comedians that have been working in those places. There have even been some talk about organizing a comedians' union. Only I couldn't talk Walter Reuther into coming to Hollywood on speculation. Walter Reuther, that's a pay raise that breathes, you know. The only trouble with the comedians' union is that Congress wouldn't get anywhere examining our books. They've all read Joe Miller before. But on the level, we're going to have some really big problems in 1946. Just imagine trying to lay an egg in Esperanto. Some of us have just barely learned to lay them in English. Not speaking for myself, of course, the old cracker. The only thing all those delegates would be able to understand would be jokes about Crosby's horses. They run just as bad in Greek as they do in Spanish. This racetrack fever really gets you, though. Even Bing's horses tell me they're now following the horses. But getting back to the United Nations, it's a great thing, you know, letting us have the headquarters here in the United States. That's like taking your loaded dice and deciding to hold a crap game at your rich uncle's. But seriously, folks, it really is a great thing, having all those world statesmen meeting here in 1946 and talking about world peace and new eras for mankind. I've never seen an era myself, but I've seen a lot of kids in khaki who went hungry over there, hungry and tired and dirty and bloody for the hope of peace. I've never seen an era, but I've seen a lot of men who died a violent death to give the world another chance to solve its problems in peace over a conference table instead of a bloody battlefield. Yeah, problems of peace. We can be sure of one thing. There'll be a lot of problems in 1946. The atomic bomb and jobs for the returning soldiers, fighting back inflation while seeing no one suffers from low wages, and boundary disputes, and who's going to run China, and what we're finally going to do in Japan, and how are we going to help the war-ravaged people get back on their feet. A lot of problems. But I've never seen a problem yet that a good hearty laugh couldn't help solve. Maybe that's what our comedians can really do in 1946. Help us lighten some of our post-war problems with a laugh. A laugh when it's needed most. That's the best outlook we can offer you, America, for 1946. A happy new year, everyone. Thanks for listening. And now back to New York.
On the subject of predictions for 1946, then, our documentary is closed.
But this is Robert St. John inviting you to listen to the National Hour next Sunday, when our subject will be an industry we touched upon only briefly today, aviation in peacetime.
This has been the National Hour. From our studios in New York, Washington, and Hollywood, the National Broadcasting Company has presented the seventh of the new series on current affairs and national problems. Robert St. John was your moderator, with Robert McCormick reporting from Washington. This is the National Broadcasting Company.